Hello, I'm Barry Daniel, and this is the podcast of the Middle Way Society. Our aim is to encourage a universal approach to living a more integrated, ethical life, avoiding dogma or any appeal to authority. My guest today is Rod King, the founder and campaign director of 20's Plenty for Us, a movement set up to campaign for a default 20-mile speed limit in the UK. He's going to talk about its rationale, the challenges that it has faced and faces, the effect that it's had, and its hopes for the future. Hello, Rod. Welcome to the Middle Way Society podcast.
Okay. Thank you, Barry. Pleased to be here.
Okay. Well, could you start, Rod, by telling us a bit about your background, maybe, and what prompted you to set it up?
Well, if you go back probably around about 2000, I did for each year as a sort of holiday, just go on a cycle tour. I was just heading off on my own, and I did a couple around the Netherlands, around Ireland, down through the River Duero in Spain. But in 2004, I decided I'd visit Warrington's twin town. Warrington is the town where I live. Yeah. And that's in Hilden in Germany. I was aware that 23% of their in-town trips were by bicycle, which is quite a high proportion. It's about similar to somewhere like Cambridge in the UK. And I wanted to find out what sort of cycle facilities they had and how they'd gone about that. And when I got across there, I found that there was very little in the way of cycle facilities. But what there was they put in a 30 kilometers per hour speed limit. That's 18 and a half miles per hour, yeah. Back in the 1990s. And that was the foundation of their walking and cycling strategies. They were saying, we can make our town more livable for walking and cycling if we reduce the differential speed between cyclists and walkers and the motor car. And that's what they did. And that made me start to think two things. That first of all, for every 100 people that they were moving around their town, they had about 25 fewer cars on the road than we did in Warrington. And also that in Warrington we were trying to make things safe for cyclists and walkers with prevailing traffic speeds, which were 60% higher at 30 miles an hour, yeah, than they would tolerate in our twin town. And you combine that with the view that, well, our journey times are dictated not by how fast we go, but usually by how long we're stopped at junctions or congestion points or whatever. And it struck me that if we could actually do the same in our town, then that would be worthwhile. So I started to campaign in Warrington for that to happen, because as a local authority, it had the ability to set its own urban speed limits. And that started in 2004. I think my report, which I did, was picked up, and I was asked to present at an international cycling conference, which I did in 2005. And gradually I had this situation where I was learning the guidance, understanding how it all worked, what the opportunity was for this. And various people were asking me questions. And I decided in 2007 to set up a website, yeah, and a campaign, because, well, many people were interested in it. Cycling organization, pedestrians, etc. No one really seemed to focus on it or have that information. So that's why, with really no resources, I set up 20's Plenty for Us as a campaign, set up with a website, with the intention of really providing people with information about how one could go about setting lower speed limits. And I think we always felt that when you have no resources, you want to leverage the resources which people have. And so from the very start, we took an approach of working with the willing and helping those people who wanted help rather than trying to convince anybody who didn't want that help. And it grew, and that's because there's more of us now, right? But gradually local campaigns were set up, and I'm delighted to say that now, what, 7 years later, we have 254 local campaigns around the country.
Wow. Right.
And I said about leverage, the point is that that's all people within their local communities working with their councillors, their officers, and the rest of the community to talk about, right, how lower speeds will be beneficial to all. And I think that's a real strength of our campaign. It's not what I or any of the people who do work for direct work for 2020 for us do, but it's in the strength of all those campaigners and people who really just want their, they want to make their places better places to be.
Yeah, and I think that community focus is arguably reflected in the name 20's Plenty for Us, isn't it?
Yes, that was chosen quite deliberately to actually have a feeling of us, of community, of partnership, rather than me as well. This was something, I think, although I approached this as a cyclist, I quickly found out that actually four times as many people who are walking are killed on the roads as are cyclists. And, you know, this is something which is universal, right, for all modes of transport and people. And so, yes, the us is very important in there.
Yeah. And okay, well, like, should we have a look at what the rationale is behind the campaign in terms of safety?
Well, the fact is that a motor car travelling at 20 miles an hour can stop in a certain distance. Yeah. And if you take that same motor car and it's travelling at 30 miles an hour, then in the distance the 20 mile an hour car will have stopped, the 30 mile an hour car is still doing 24 miles an hour and will go on the same distance as well before it stops completely. And that gives an idea of how a lower speed has a very large effect in giving everybody, I think, the space and the time to take avoiding action. And then when there is that unfortunate circumstance where an incident cannot be avoided from it turning into a collision, then the severity and the speed of all the various parties in that is much reduced, and therefore the consequences are lower, right? And I think that's an important, if like, foundation of the safety aspect of it. But there are a number of other things which affect safety from a secondary way. And I think that is about when a vehicle is traveling at a lower speed, the driver is able to engage with the community much more. People are seen as people rather than passers-by. Yeah. And therefore, one has a much greater feel, right, of one's responsibilities to those people. And I think that's one of the things where we've got into this situation where we have perhaps condoned higher speeds. Cars have got very much more comfortable. They've become less noisy. They provide us lots of protection when we're inside of the car, yet actually they're virtually the same outside. So they insulate the driver, but not the pedestrian or the cyclist or the person outside, and so things which we can do which will re-engage between those two groups of people, I think, is very beneficial.
Yeah, and what are its? I mean, you're not just focusing on safety. What are its other benefits?
Well, the other benefits I think really come to us when we're walking and using what I refer to as the public space between houses that we call streets. And once you do look at them within that context, then they become different places. And for those people who want to use those public spaces, and let's face it, they're a public asset for all the community, then suddenly that becomes becomes a much more pleasant experience, whether you're walking, whether you're shopping, right? Yeah. Whether you're talking to your neighbor, whether you're cycling, whether you're sitting in a roadside seat or a cafe at the time, then your place becomes a much more interesting place, a much more comfortable place to be in.
Yeah.
So that certainly that's one benefit, and of course it's because there's a reduction in noise, there's a reduction in the speed of the vehicles. There are actually lower emissions because most of the emissions actually come from vehicle acceleration, and so therefore if you can take out the acceleration between 20 and 30 miles an hour, then you cut out almost half of the emissions which are associated with getting up to that limiting speed. So there are a lot of advantages which come from it.
Yeah, okay. To what extent does it have public support?
Well, each year the government commissions what is called the British Social Attitude Survey. And that takes a number of people and gauges their support for many things or views on many things. And every couple of years, they actually include a question: is do you believe that 20 mile an hour is the right speed limit for residential streets? And they gauge the ones who strongly disagree. I think are easy, agree, and then strongly agree. And you know, it's about 73% are in favour, right? And that's something which has been staying high, right? So I think it's one of these things as well, is if you make that decision about what is right from without the confines of your car when one is driving, mm-hmm. right? Then you will have that view that 20 mile an hour is right. And much of this is about people making that lifestyle decision that they will just travel at a little bit slower and a more appropriate speed for their surroundings when a 20 mile an hour limit is implemented.
You mentioned Germany earlier on. Do you think this is a part of a wider movement or change of attitude to speed worldwide?
I think it's perhaps a swing of that pendulum. There has certainly been, I think, in the latter part of the 20th century, there was a view, particularly in the 70s, that, okay, yes, everybody would have a motor vehicle and we would drive everywhere and so on. And I think we've moved on from there into the 21st century. And I think it is something which is almost universal, which I've found once starting this sort of campaign and movement, that it attracts attention from all over the world. And what is more, there are similar movements all over the world for cycling, walking, and just livability of our cities and communities.
Have you been working together with other movements in Europe or around the world?
Yes, we have. In 2010, I was invited to go to New York to present at a speed conference there. I've been to various ones in Europe. There are a number of movements throughout Europe for lower speeds, or Tempo 30, as it's called there, because of course it's 30 kilometres per hour. Indeed, just last week I was in Ireland at the invite of the Road Safety Authority in Ireland to talk about the 20 mile an hour limits in the UK at their Road Safety Conference.
Right. Okay. I understand that around 20% of people in the UK and actually 30% of Londoners now have a default limit of 20 miles per hour for roads. How has that happened? And has there been a different approach in London to the rest of the country?
Well, I mean, yes, there are. Certainly London is different. If we go back, the first authorities which implemented wide area 20 mile an hour limits across the whole authority, which is something which we call total 20. It doesn't mean every road. It means that there are exceptions. But the first one was Portsmouth, I think, followed by Oxford. And it tended to be unitary authorities. My own authority, Warrington, is a unitary one. So it has total responsibility for all the roads within that town or city. And the situation now was we have, I think, the majority of the larger urban authorities. So we're talking about Manchester, Liverpool, Oxford, Cambridge, Bristol, Bath, Newcastle, Coventry, York, Cowdedale, Sefton, the whole of Lancashire, and Brighton and Hove. And we have a large number of the London boroughs. Right. In fact, of the inner London boroughs, we have around about 75% of those have all adopted a default 20-mile-an-hour limit. Right. Now, the situation is different in London because I think there is perhaps a difference between the inner London boroughs, where they're probably moving ahead of the London norm because of the particular characteristics of probably higher density than the outer suburbs, right? And they also have a lot of workers. I think one of the interesting thing is that one of the London boroughs which has been most keen on 20-mile-an-hour limits is the City of London. And they have 400,000 people working there who come into the city every day. And they're very keen that they will protect those people with both a better road environment for them to interact with vehicles and also a more pleasant place to work. Yeah. Right. So there are differences. But again, another development in London is that now Transport for London, which is the authority which manages the major arterial and network roads within London, is implementing some pilots on a number of key London arterial roads. And what they're developing as well is this concept that roads have both the characteristic of place and the characteristic of movement.
Okay.
And that whilst the arterial ones are important for movement, at the same time, where they go through shopping centres, through high streets, through borough centres, they have a very much a sense of place for all their road users. And again, it's understanding, right, how the needs of both sets of users, right, road users, need to be accommodated, need to be shared, and need to be protected. And that's where 20-mile-an-hour limits are coming in on some of those routes as well.
Yeah, so it's about finding a balance in a way then.
Yes, it's doing that, but a much better nuancing and finesse, I think, in understanding that streets are dual purpose. They are not just for motorised vehicles and their movement, they're for the transit of people, for the presence of people as well. And it's understanding how one can accommodate all of those and minimise the detriment to any parties.
Okay, well, that brings me on to my next question, that your approach is not dogmatic. Another example of this is that you're not advocating a blanket ban, are you?
No, we have never said that all roads should be 20. What we have said is that a road should be 20 unless the local authorities can find a good reason for otherwise, and they do, but we don't particularly, get involved with those reasons. We feel that that's for the local community to decide, and that can be on many grounds in terms of it could be the road width, it could be protected, if like facilities for pedestrians or cyclists. And again, we try and get across that one should look at the principles first and allow the detail to be worked out after those principles, right? And I think that's an important way of going about working in the public domain, right? the details should never, if obscure, the principles which you're looking to get, and that's a better sharing of those public spaces.
Okay, so what evidence is there to suggest that it's working?
Well, certainly in the pilots which were conducted in Warrington when it was started, they did a very large pilot which included a large area of residential roads. I think it was about 150. And they found a 27% reduction of casualties on those roads compared to the movement of casualties in the rest of the road network in Warrington at the same time. And I think generally, wherever pilots have been done, when the officers and those responsible for the roads have looked at those in detail, right, they have actually come out and said, well, we want to do more of this. And this has happened in so many places, in Bristol, in Edinburgh, in parts of London, in Brighton, and all of these places, that they've, wherever 20-mile-an-hour limits have been put in, it's worked well in terms of casualty reduction, and also it's worked well in terms of user satisfaction. Right? So very positive results. Sometimes, however, one has to say that in any intervention, completely pinning down, if you like, causality is difficult. Yeah. Right, and I have to say that. But overall, the trend of evidence is certainly right that that lowering speeds have a good effect wherever you can lower speeds. The usual rule of thumb is a 6% reduction in casualties for every 1 mile an hour reduction in speed. Right, and that's the sort of thing which we're seeing.
There has been some conflicting reports about its success in other areas. I'm thinking of particularly Wiltshire and Leicestershire.
I think there are two things. I think there is a comparison to when you put in physically calmed streets to lower speeds. There's no doubt that those work very well, and typically one will get a 10-mile-an-hour reduction if one's going to put in speed bumps, right? Whereas one does get a lower reduction if you just say we're lowering the speed, and some people look at that and say, well, they're not as effective. There are two, I think, very great differences. First of all, is if you put in physical calming, it's around about 50 times more expensive. Or to put that another way, you can treat 250 people living on one street with physically calm speed bumps or chicanes, right? Or you can treat 12,500 people with the same amount of public expenditure with a 20-mile-an-hour limit, right? And there is this issue as well that when you put in physical calming in just a very small isolated area, you're actually endorsing traveling faster as soon as you get outside of that physically calmed area. If your prime mechanism of communication is not with lifestyle decisions to go slower, but driving decisions to go slower because it's more uncomfortable, then you're actually limiting the amount of communications which you're getting to really those places which you can afford to put that physical calming in. So it's not a case of saying that physical calming isn't effective, but saying if one wants a macro, if like intervention, then wide area 20-mile-an-hour limits will be better, will actually be more cost-effective as well, because whilst one gets a smaller overall reduction in speeds, it can be over 50 times the area.
Sure,
right?
Yeah.
And therefore it is important there.
Okay. You've been accused from some sources of being anti-car. What's your response to that?
Not at all. I drive. Most of the people who are involved in the whole 2020 movement, if you wish, or even the people saying it's a good thing, drive as well. In that British Social Attitude Survey, they found that 70% of the respondents who were drivers also agreed that 20 mile an hour was the right limit for residential roads. And remember that we're not talking about 20 miles an hour everywhere. And people do recognize as well that one's journey time is not affected by how fast you go. It's by how long you stopped. And there's that realization that really it doesn't affect the time for journeys. It may mean that you get to the end of the next queue of cars a couple of seconds later, in which case you'll have to wait a couple of seconds less for it to move on. Right. But it's not very material in journey times. And I think we're mainly portrayed as anti-car by those people who are vehemently pro-car. Right. And that may be something which they wish to do, but once people find what we really are looking for and the people who are involved in the campaign, then they realize that that's a false a position.
Yeah, okay. And then another accusation is that you're party political.
Well, if we're party political, we've actually probably one of the most successful organizations because we're party political with almost everybody. I have to say that the first administration which put in wide area 20 mile an hour limits was a Lib Dem administration, which was Portsmouth. It was followed by, I think, Islington, which was Labour with one Green councillor. It was followed by Oxford, which was controlled by Oxfordshire County Council, which was Conservative. Lancashire has done it for the whole of Lancashire, and that was proposed and initiated by a Conservative administration. In my own hometown of Warrington, it was a Lib Dem Conservative coalition which decided on 20 mile an hour limits, and then when that was replaced by a Labour administration, they endorsed it and continued in with gusto. So no, I say this isn't about the colour of politics, but it is about the quality of democracy, and it is about how much councillors and politicians can understand and get close to their communities and speak rationally about topics such as the respective speed of vehicles on community life and so on. And that's where there can be a differences between different authorities and their empathy, right, with lower speeds and the empathy with their wishes of their constituents for lower speeds.
Okay, well, let's move on now and perhaps explore some of the concerns people have. One of them is if you don't have physical traffic calming in place, such as speed bumps, won't people just ignore it?
Well, there certainly is evidence that as a result of 20 mile an hour limits, speeds reduce on almost all roads. Right. On some roads, they don't reduce much because the speeds were already low, and those can actually dilute the overall average speed reduction. In fact, it varies between about 0 and 6 miles per hour. Those faster roads will get a bigger speed reduction, but they may still not be as low as one would like. One of the things, though, is it's a great mistake to think of this as signs on sticks or traffic management. This is very much about communities through the democratic process, through the process of engagement, which local authorities are doing when they're implementing 20 mile an hour limits, making those lifestyle decisions about going slower. Right. And one of the things with the later implementations by local authorities is they are becoming much more astute in the way in which they're engaging with communities and really providing that community benefit. And they're getting across this view that if you drive fast in a community, you take something away from that community all the time. It doesn't matter whether you haven't hit anybody, yeah, but you're taking something out of that community if you drive faster. If you drive slower, you always put something into the community. You make it a better place for people to walk. And, you know, if there's something which can actually make us feel better, and we can make align that with something which makes the community feel better, then that's a very powerful thing. And that is really what is happening. And the more it's recognized that, you know, 20 mile an hour is the right speed limit for residential roads, then the more this is seen not as a controversial thing, but as very much a social norm. And 20 mile an hour limits are very much becoming the social norm in our cities and towns across the country.
No, I really like that idea of putting something into the community rather than taking out. Perhaps in relation to this, you prefer to talk about compliance rather than enforcement. Could you expand on that?
Well, many people will ask that question, well, what about enforcement? Well, you only need enforcement if you haven't got compliance. And so rather than focusing on enforcement, I prefer to look at compliance and how one can gain compliance. And that is very much through that whole engagement process. And the engagement process can involve multi-agencies within communities. You know, I've talked further about previously about the benefits, but one, if like more indirect benefit, is independent mobility. Independent mobility for our children. How do we feel about children going out on the streets, right, where there's a 30 mile an hour limit right outside our door, right? How do we feel about the elderly doing that twice weekly walk to the shops and the time which it may take them to cross the road with fast traffic? So what we've got in all of this is a recognition and engagement that it can involve those responsible for the mental health of our children. It can involve those who have the responsibility for the physical health of the elderly when they stop their active mobility and walking to the shops. So suddenly what we have is a lot of agencies within a authority way beyond road safety or traffic management are actually saying, well, yes, in education, this would be good if we can get more children walking and cycling to school, finding their independent mobility through their early years and through their teens. The public health will be saying we can get more people feeling more comfortable about walking and cycling, and we can for the elderly as well. So suddenly you have a lineup of agencies within the public sector who are actually saying, well, we can add our weight to this as well. So suddenly, right, if we get this alignment, then the message is getting across in a much more coordinated way through the engagement, and that raises compliance. But equally, if you look at the people around a room in the public authority that can assist in that, you get to the police and you find they have a role as well. And their role is to provide that enforcement for those who haven't accepted that compliance need through that engagement process and haven't done it willingly. And that is actually what the police are designed for. We have a long-held principle in this country that we have elected representatives of communities set laws. We have a professional police force that enforces those laws, and we have an independent judiciary that sentences those who break those laws. Yeah. And I think that's something which we have, which works very well. But at the same time, it works most of all when we have to do as little of it as possible.
Yeah.
But we will always have to do some.
I heard about an interesting initiative in Liverpool that involved the schools that, you'll probably know more about this than me, but that if someone gets caught speeding near a school, then they have to go into school and confront the kids that use that school. Is that right?
I think it's another way of engagement, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's a way of the police and the schools say, look, there is a dimension to this. This idea that speeding is a victimless crime is a myth. Speed becomes greed when it the few seconds which you save take away the right of children and the elderly and all of us to feel that we can walk or cycle and use our streets. So ways in which we can actually make that clear, right, through community values being expressed in that way, I think are a very positive thing, right? And yes, that's a very I think interesting and excellent initiative, yeah. Which actually shows that this all matters.
What's the sort of process of change within local communities?
Well, often we will get someone who comes to us and say they represent their community, they want lower speeds, but they maybe have contacted the council officers and they weren't getting anywhere or whatever. And one of the ways in which we respond to them is to say, well, look, the most important thing is that you're able to measure the extent and scope of your community support, because within local authorities, within national governments as well, policy is set by representatives of communities understanding what their communities aspire for. Yep. So your first step in getting your politicians to be sensitized to what you as a community want is to understand and debate that within your community. If then politicians can understand that this is what their constituents want, then they can work with the professionals within that that public body, that local authority, the traffic engineers, the public health people, etc., and say, how can we deliver what people want? And then you've got this alignment of both community, the community representatives, and the professionals. And that is the way in which you make this process happen. And that's really basically what has happened in all of these places around the country.
Okay, so it's like a sort of bottom-up process.
I think it's what we call community-led, establishment-endorsed. Okay. And we often say that if you want behaviour change at community level, for the man and woman in the street or driving the car, then what better way to actually start than with the community? Yeah. Right. So it's community-led, but importantly, it's establishment endorsed. And that's when the local authority sets those speed limits and says, these are mandatory speed limits. They're not advisory. This is what we expect. And this is being endorsed by the establishment and the authority and the law.
In terms of the future, do you have a target?
Well, I mean, we started off with a target of just helping those communities who wanted help. And over the years, that has been really successful, you know, with now most of the urban authorities taking this up. And other urban authorities, I think, thinking it's worthwhile, but maybe it's not quite so high on their list of priorities or in terms of expenditure. Right. So one of the things which we have now, I guess, as a target is delivering this more universally. Right, because this clearly is a universal aspiration at community level to make better places to live. And one of the biggest problems which there has been in terms of cost in the UK has been that when 20-mile-an-hour limits were put in the early 1990s in the UK, they were special places which were the exceptions rather than the rule. Yeah. And therefore, there had to be a lot of signage to tell people that one had to slow down here, right, and it was abnormal. Well, now we have places like Birmingham, Manchester, Liverpool, most of inner London saying 70-80% of our roads have a 20 mile an hour limit. The exceptions are the 30 mile an hour now, not the 20, right? So all of those places have rejected the 30-mile-an-hour blanket limit, yeah, as not being appropriate anymore. So we think it's time for the government to recognise that it's in transition from that 20th century view of 30 everywhere and 20 mile an hour in a few places to a situation where it now has 20 mile an hour in almost all the urban areas with 30, 40 or 50 mile an hour limits where appropriate. And to do that in a way where it becomes a national norm by 2020. But in the meantime, it recognizes that if a city or town can say we're a 20 mile an hour city, then within that place, 20 mile an hour is a default. And you only put the additional repeater signs. These are the ones within a limit, by the way, not the boundaries between 20 or 30 or 30 or 40, right? But you only put the repeater signs on the 30 mile an hour roads, which at the moment isn't allowed.
Right. What is your understanding of the middle way, Rod, if any? And if so, how might that relate to what we've been talking about today?
Well, my understanding that the middle way is trying to take two sides of something and then looking to find how the different, if like features of each can be brought together to see where they match and to see where there are misunderstandings and how those misunderstandings can be resolved into common benefits. And I think that the whole 20 mile an hour movement is very much about that. It's about bringing together separate perspectives, perhaps. Mm. The perspective which one gets when one's driving a car with the perspective where the same person is actually standing at the side of the road. Yeah. Right? The perspective of the person who particularly always drives their car against the person who may cycle. Right? And I think one of the things which we always have done is to try and provide context. Context for the issue of speed, context for the issue of the choice of people to choose whether they should walk or cycle. Context in terms of widening the benefits and seeing the disbenefits as well and putting all of those into perspective. I mean, a good example of this, if I go faster on my way to the next congestion point, does it really benefit me? Well, yes, it does, because it feels as if I'm making good progress. But that's a benefit for me, which is very short-lived. Is there any benefit in my journey time? Well, perhaps not. Is there a benefit for other people in terms of me traveling faster in order to feel better? Well, clearly not. In fact, there's a disbenefit. And it's about taking these issues, I think, and trying to get them down into their basics, understand that context and the different context for different people and how that would affect their lives. I think as well, one of the things for people, there's a disconnect. Often in road safety, we're very concerned about some event which could happen on very rare occasions and our response to it, such as the situation where a child runs out into the road in front of your car. It's not a situation which any of us want to be in. Mm-hmm. It's probably a situation that very few of us have really experienced. And the idea that our changing our behavior all the time to somehow accommodate that event which none of us have experienced and don't want to experience is probably not a good motivation factor, right? But actually driving slower so that we can make our community feel better every time we drive slower is something which we can get a much better feedback on, right? If we can condition ourselves to understand and respond to that feedback. And I think this is what the whole movement is about. Challenging sometimes preconceived ideas about lower speeds and really looking at those and saying what's the context, what's the values, how does it really affect society and the broader groups in society as well. I once went to an event which I was presenting at, and someone talked about community action and campaigning and so on. And through their presentation, they talked right the way through about campaigns reinventing themselves and understanding and widening their perspective and so on. And I was listening to what they were presenting, and I said, that's what we do, and that's why we are successful. And I think I've gone through this, and I actually think, well, yes, actually, the middle way is probably what we're doing.
Yes.
It's actually saying the two extremes and saying, no, we're not the people who are saying there shouldn't be any cars, and we're not the people who are saying we should only have cars. We're the people who are saying, how can we work all this together and share what we have?
I think that's, for me, that's the middle way expressed wonderfully, very, very effectively, Rod. Okay, my last question. If people wanted to find out more about the movement and perhaps how to get involved themselves, how would they go about it?
One of the things which we've always believed in is providing information for people so that they can make up their own mind, and also providing links to other research and other findings and reports which have been made available. And that's where our website, I think, is very important. If you look at our website, which is www.20splentyforus.org.uk, then you will find that we've got two areas. One is briefings, where we have about 50 individual briefing sheets, all about a page long, on various subjects. It might be how children and families benefit, it might be on emissions, it might be on the results which they've found from a particular report done in Edinburgh or some other city. But all of those are available on our website, together with our press releases, which is giving more up-to-date responses to events which happen. And then one of the things which we do is, where a local community does want to campaign for lower speeds, we will help them. We will provide them with that information. We'll give them advice on how to go about it, how to make that community support tangible, so that the politicians can understand and respond to that support, and then how that may over time be progressed into an actual development of policy by the local authority. And certainly that's something which we have. We have two members of staff who work for us. One is our national campaign manager, Anna Sumlian, who does that, and also a London campaign coordinator, Jeremy Leach, who does that for our London campaigns. So yes, we'd be delighted to assist anyone who wants to do that. They can contact us by email as well, right, or telephone. We'd be pleased to respond.
Okay, well, thanks very much for talking to me today, Rod. It's been not only it's been very informative, it's been a real pleasure, and good luck with the project.
Okay, thank you.
You can find out more about Middle Way Philosophy at www.middlewaysociety.org.